Previously on 24.
This is Air Force One. We are declaring an emergency. We're not gonna make it. I have to put it down now.
Chloe, what's happening?
Air Force One, you copy?
Chloe!
Air Force One is down.
This may be him. It's the President. He's still alive. I repeat, the President is alive.
Marwan has to be within a 50-mile radius.
Jack,
there's a higher priority than finding Marwan.
What is it?
Recovering the nuclear football.
Didn't it go down with Air Force One?
The missile inflicted enough damage that the plane left a trail of debris as it went down. A lot of things were sucked out, including the football. That case contains the codes and locations of our entire nuclear arsenal.
What's the location of the football?
40 miles northeast of here in the middle of the desert.
Air support! Football is in the lead! Jeep headed north! Take it out!
I'm in possession of the football. Three hostiles are down, one escape. I'm not positive, but I think it was Marwan. There's some pages missing.
Tell me what the contents are of the missing pages.
Jack, it's the red section, which contains warhead locations and activation codes. If they get a hold of a warhead and a matching activation code, we will not be able to stop them.
Mr. Vice President.
President Keeler is alive. But he's in critical condition. Sir, I recommend you invoke the 25th Amendment and take control of things as soon as possible.
You're worried about him.
I am. He seems unsure of himself.
I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Mr. President, I've just received a phone call from CTU. Part of the nuclear football has fallen into the hands of terrorists.
The following takes place between 12 a.m. and 1 a.m.
Okay. I'm Sean Callery, the composer of the show, sitting next to
John Cassar, who directed this particular episode.
And this would mark our 50-something episode of
That's
television
right.
episode.
That's right. Sean and I worked on La Femme Nikita together. I think, I did 14 episodes. You did all of them, but
I did
14 over the 4 years.
I have affectionately come to know John as an evil person because starting in season three, he started putting together these really colossal action scenes. So when I start an episode, I always see who directed it. And when it's John, I'll know that my weekend is gone. We'll be working all
There's
weekend.
Lots of work to do.
I remember back in episode six, I know we're doing 18, but you did a huge action sequence, and I thought it felt like episode 24.
Yeah, I know. It was always amazing to us that we had up such an action scene in episode six.
I know.
That's the way this show works.
Thank God Thanksgiving was after that. We had to rejuvenate.
But in this particular episode, it was interesting to me because we got to do something a little different as far as torture. Really, this was the non-torture episode.
Yes. It was a nice little departure because it's a little difficult to watch those sometimes. These episodes are interesting because another quality I noticed as we started getting the later seasons is the moment you come out of the recap, you would start right on the action. You'd start right on the story. In the first season, if you ever watched the first season, they always had sort of an opening montage music. Here, as you can tell, is, you know, Joel and Bob and John, they love having movement and propulsion. The show is so, you know, so right out of the gate, you can probably hear here we have some propulsion happening.
Now that, of course, from your end, I mean, that's something you need to constantly push. I mean, you help us with that. That propulsion is, you know, you're a big part of that, pushing it along. You can even hear it in the music in these particular scenes.
Here's a situation where, like, we build up a little, and then we cross to a new location, but we kind of keep the tension going. And this was something that it was a sort of a little trick we used because Joel and you guys wanted to always keep a sense of time going. And so the trick was if we just keep pulsing over scenes that we might conventionally take the music out,
right,
it would sort of tie everyone together as things happening simultaneously. So.
But, of course, that makes it much harder for you. What are we, 4 minutes into the show and the music hasn't stopped? Talk a little bit about that because I'm not sure people understand how much music you have to design and come up with for these episodes.
You know, these shows play without commercials about 44 minutes, and the scores hover around 36 to 38 minutes.
Wow.
You know? Now, I would say that the show probably doesn't need as much music if you didn't want it because when I get the episodes, I watch them bone dry.
Right.
Oh, here's an area without music. Let's listen to that for a second.
but I mean, how do you make that decision?
Yeah.
When you watch a show, were the scenes, like, for example, this one.
Right.
Is clean. So yep. How did you make that decision?
Well, my wingman on the show is Jeff Charbonneau. He's a music editor. And what we do is we both look at the show bone dry without music.
Right. Absolutely nothing. Just dialogue.
Just
and sound
dialogue.
Effects.
Just dialogue. Now, I know that when the picture cuts are sent to the networks, we put in placeholder music.
That's right.
And that's replaced all the time. And what we'll look at the episode and we'll pick in and out points. Basically, we'll say, you know, we need music here. The obvious areas where we need music, like in this episode, there's the action scenes, the opening montage, we always know we have music. But where it really gets to be a question of meticulous and where it really makes the show really flow and not flow is when a good music editor and myself, we decide, you know, we don't need music in every single moment of the show. Otherwise, it starts to diminish the effectiveness of the score. So here we.
Does the quality of the scene, is that something you look at?
Well,
you say, is it strong enough to, you know, that the performances are good enough that I don't need to be in there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll even sometimes occasionally get a call years ago, you know, we'd get a call and say, you know, this scene doesn't quite gel completely, and
Right. Would
you just keep an eye on it and say, sure. But I can honestly say, I don't think I've seen a bad moment in the series. I mean, really.
That needed, like, a lot of music.
That needed life support. That needed, like, CPR. Nothing.
Because, I mean, that is part of your job, too. I mean, part of your job is a scene went this way, and then we would say, you know what? It wasn't light enough, or it wasn't serious enough.
Right.
Put music in it. That'll make it more serious.
Right. See, here's an area where we pull back a little bit because there's a little stuff between Jack and Audrey.
I'm okay.
What have the doctors told you about Paul?
They're having a hard time keeping him stable.
Just one little note. The guy sitting beside him is our prop guy, Michael Patt. I wanted to put someone in the helicopter. That was a day of shooting.
Can I get in the helicopter next year?
You can be in the helicopter next year.
You know.
Or I can sit in the helicopter, but I'll look like there's a terrorist sitting with Jack, so that won't work. So, but that's Michael Patt. In fact, this particular show.
Oh, I love the shot.
Between this one and the other one, yeah, we love that shot. And, yeah, that was actually really interesting. At one point, that was another episode, we actually blacked out a section from the pulse bomb going off.
Really?
You have to kind of watch it really carefully. It's in one of the earlier episodes.
Is everything all right?
No, it's not.
And this is interesting, too, because this character that plays, you know, in the show that gets to the marina eventually, in fact, was at one point his wife, and then we sort of cut out the whole Marwan has a family thing just because of the sensitivity with the Middle Eastern sort of
issues,
nations and issues. And so then it became his brother. So this guy was his brother at one point. We actually shot a scene where they, you know, said brother and they called each other brother. And that went away.
Oh, wow.
And then it just became a guy.
See, now it's pretty interesting because if I had known he was a brother, like if he was a brother character,
it textually
would have been a different
Absolutely.
Thing. One thing you guys really like on the show, and on this episode you can kind of hear it, when we take organic, you know, sort of traditional things like the helicopter and the orchestra stuff,
yes, right.
But we have odd textures, really creepy sort of subliminal textures that kind of make us a little unsettled. You know, that whole van sequence is nothing but that.
Yeah. Now, when we get to this,
it's
a different deal for you, right? I mean, you've got sort of the CTU and what's happening over there.
Yep.
And then I always find, like, I call it the president's music, but this whole side, the president's side, always has a different feel.
Yeah, it's a little more grounded, organic. I think I developed a little trumpet melody for this guy.
That's what it is. That's what you hear the most.
Yeah, and he's a little... It's a little unsettled. It's a little dissonant. It's sort of designed to imply his unsure footing.
Right.
You know, I hope I pulled it off.
But it's interesting because you had the trumpet thing for Palmer, but it was more of a fanfare.
Yeah, it was a fanfare thing.
It was the president.
That's right.
Well, it's interesting that you were able to. I didn't even notice that. That's really interesting you're saying that. And this was our first time going down into the bunker. Now, here's a little note. If you can look at this wide shot and imagine that these are the staircase from the Arras house. This was the exact same set that the designer, Joseph Hodges, just, you know, again, for money, we have to do these kind of things.
It's amazing.
He just redesigned.
It's amazing.
And if you turn this corner, that was the living room at one point.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this was the living room and the staircase from the Arras.
I visited the set once, and I went to the living room. That was, like, nicer than the apartment I lived in when I worked on Nikita.
And it was actually, it was its fourth reincarnation.
Really?
The Arras house was how this set started.
Oh.
Then eventually became the bunker, but it was two other things in between.
This shot that you got of him, the way he's like frightened, then he morphs into what am I going into? God of Almighty.
Yeah.
It was just great, man. Yeah. I just think I don't know what you do, but you get a lot out of people saying nothing. I don't know what it was.
But I think that's something we started even on Nikita, even with Joel. You know, I think it's and I think that's why you've been such a good fit for us, because we both, Joel and I, love those moments. You know, we're A, you treat the audience on a more intelligent level, and you say, here, figure it out. You know, here's a guy that's, you know, being thrust into this position, and he looks through those glass doors like, gee, so I really want to be in that room. But you pick up on it right away. That's what we love.
I'd like to think that the Nikita experience kind of contributed to the synergy that we got on this show. I mean, I can just...
Well, we even said less in Nikita than we say on this show. I mean, there were huge moments of no dialogue in Nikita.
So you're pretty confident you'll be able to catch this terrorist.
But it must be interesting for you when it's a new character like this.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
I guess, you know, you go along and we're giving you episode after episode.
Well, sometimes I'll call ahead. I'll say, you know, what is the survival factor on this guy? Is he going to be like a Klingon red shirt? Is
so
he going to be
his
dead?
Own theme?
Exactly. I mean, how much do I want to put in him, you know?
But in our case, you know, he became very strong.
Do you discover after filming a show or two with a character, you said, you know, this guy's good. Let's keep him going. Like, do you guys make tactical changes all the time?
Absolutely.
Right?
It's something that happens on the show. And I think it's one of the things that we've talked about all the time, being one of the reasons it's as successful as it is. Because we're able to react to what, A, the audience is liking, and B, what we're liking. I mean, we're, you know, there's, you know, I don't think, you know, Gregory has just taken over this role as vice president.
It's phenomenal.
As this unsure kind of politician thrust into, you know, this crisis that I think the writers just went to town.
Yeah.
The second they saw the first dailies, they said, oh my God, we've got something.
We've got a winner here,
And so they just started, you know, adjusting it all. You know, Reiko was the same thing. I mean, she was brought in, you know, as Michelle, brought in year two, just as another person that sits on a, you know, computer and gives us plot points, and suddenly she's become one of our biggest and most favorite characters, her relationship between Tony and Carlos. So Carlos and her. So yeah, we've always done that. It's really been fun, you know, to do that.
I want him running point on this takedown.
Tell Curtis to remain discreet.
These briefing scenes always have a little bit of pulsing. I think we're almost at the point in the show where Michelle and Tony are starting
to
reconnect again. I don't know if it happens in this or the next one, I forget. There's an act out, what we call the Glenn Larson act out. And there's another secret about 24. You will never hear a woodwind on the show. There was just something.
Yeah, what don't you hear? That's interesting,
well,
actually, because I know Joel has things that he really hates.
I once put in a bassoon and a clarinet once, and he said, you know, gone. And he said, and for some reason, I mean, rarely can I pull it off. I can sneak it in if it's later, but he will never allow a woodwind on 24 for as long as I'm alive.
So that's a trivia game. Watch all the DVDs.
Find the clarinet.
See if you can find a clarinet. And then write in. Write in the show.
I apologize for my part in it. I'd like it if we could just let it go.
See, here's another empty moment. It's really interesting because both empty moments have been with this relationship.
Yeah.
But again, I think you don't need it.
No.
Because I think the performances by them are so strong. You know, and even just as an audience member, you just want to you want to just sit there right beside them and listen to every word.
It's very intimate. Yeah, you're right. This is where they start to
connect again.
Also, sometimes the decision whether we're going to put in music is whether the beat of the scene, you know, like, you know, this scene isn't very long between them. Now she, you know, this is really where you want to bring out her contemplation. You know, it doesn't need to happen during their dialogue.
Yeah, so that's interesting, too, because I know that's one thing you do, and that's one thing that's, you know, music is designed to do, is put that little sort of, you know, exclamation mark at the end.
Yeah,
little hint. The scene is actually over, and then you say, this is what you just saw, or this is really what that person's feeling, even though they didn't say it.
Right.
Here's what they're feeling by the music.
I mean, if I put a dark, ominous pad when she looked at Tony, I mean, what would you think?
Yeah, it'd be completely different. It makes a big difference. Yeah. And it's really interesting, because I think an audience doesn't realize that as they're watching, that we are kind of manipulating their feelings a bit, but that's our job.
Yeah.
You know, our job is to manipulate. This was interesting, too. This was an ongoing... Now, for a scene like this, it's a completely different place that we've never seen before.
That's true.
Do you really just go in and see if you can design something different, or do you just sort of look at the whole show and give it a feel?
You know what I'll generally do when I start a show is I'll go to what I call like the tent pole moments, you know, and these are big, elaborate moments that sometimes can bring out themes that I didn't know were going to happen. You know, the guy in this scene does not die, which is a plus, and he continues on. So
you want to find something that you can continue.
Yeah, it got some structure going.
Right.
But the other thing is I love about your scenes here is, you know, they're just... beautifully shot for one, and the second thing is there's a lot of sort of palpable tension even without score. I guarantee if we had the music out of this scene, it would still play very suspenseful. It would be like an episode of Sopranos or something. Yeah. I mean, but you'll notice that there's not much music here. I mean, it's just very sparse.
Yeah, and this is the kind of tension that really we've built this whole show around.
Yeah, and it just works.
You know,
and
as much as I love the action scenes in the show and I love doing them, I prefer these any day because there's just something. It's just more fun to watch than people just shooting at each other. I think you're just on the edge of your seat waiting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah,
this was an interesting night, too, because I've got this great karma about never having it rain on my episodes.
Oh.
It's something I've been saying for years, and it comes true. I don't know how. In this particular case, my karma ran out. It actually poured all night. And,
really?
And on some of the wider shots, if you look up in the black, you might be able to see some rain. But
a little rain.
You've got to imagine it's raining.
Is it raining now?
Time. It's raining. Okay. Absolutely.
Wow, I never knew
One of the reasons they're under the trees is because it's raining so hard. But we got away with it. You know, see the drop?
Yep.
It just went by there. So it's kind of, you know, watch it again if you've got a chance, audience, and just take a look and see if you can spot the rain. Obviously, everything's wet, but I mean, we always do that just to make it look better anyways, but it is really virtually pouring the whole time that we're shooting. On and off as far as, you know, intensity, but it virtually rained on us all night. I went through two rain jackets that night. There, you could see it there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. But again, it's the kind of thing where, is it going to take away from the scene? Are people going to notice? Are going to pull you out of the scene? No.
Well, I didn't notice.
Unless you say something, people don't notice. So you got to make that call when you're there, because
I don't want the rain to get in the way of the music either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the sound effects, you know.
Forget the scene. You don't want the rain to get in the way of the music.
This was this is the other thing about your scenes, man. It's like, you know, it's like 4 or 5 minutes, you know, and there's different levels of escalation, you know, the approach of the guy. Now there's
something else.
Now there's more pursuit. Now they're together. Now the decision is, do we go get them? What are they going to do? And for me, it's like, some of these ideas or the things that I think about come literally in the first viewing, because it's the only time I get to be a fan is when I watch it the first time. It's the only time.
Yeah.
And after that, it becomes interpreting.
See, I don't even get that.
Yeah?
I don't even get to be a fan like that.
Yeah, so, well, you never will.
I guess, it on a piece of paper first and then have to imagine it all.
Right.
I get to be a fan in my head when I design it all. Actually, it's really funny.
That's a great shot.
Yeah, it's a great shot.
I just love
that shot. You know what? He's great. Roger Cross is wonderful. I mean, we brought him into CTU. We really thought he was just going to be sort of a paper pusher in CTU.
Yeah.
And then realized what a great physical presence he is.
Great voice, too.
One of the early episodes when he takes the two guys out in the building.
Yeah.
It's just like unbelievable. We all went, oh, God, we got to get him out there more. Again, this is what you were talking about.
Yeah.
We just, you know, starting to realize, you know, that people have other attributes that we should be taking advantage of. And so we put him out in the field again, and he's great in the field.
This is great. This is very well mixed, too, because you hear everything.
And now you're helping here. You're building it up. You're telling the audience, we're coming to it now. You know, the conclusion is coming.
Trust me, man, it really was doing that without, when you watch it bone dry, it's still majorly powerful. Now, I didn't know this was coming, which was a delight. You know, I love being surprised even as a...
Yeah, that's, you know, we try to do as much as we can. Yeah, you don't see this coming.
Goodbye. Oh, hello.
Yosek!
And you don't know why. You're still why'd he kill him?
Yeah, it's like there's no way out of this, you know.
Completely surrounded, there's no escape!
Coming out!
Drop the gun!
Put the gun down! Put the gun down!
Step off the boat! Get off the boat!
There's a man inside, I shot him! He was gonna kill me, he was trying to steal my boat! It was self-defense!
I love this little boat that comes in. There was a guy just sitting there on his boat watching our show. Just watching a shoot. And I said, hey, what are you doing, buddy? You want to, like, quick, pay him something. I want that boat rolling in and guys coming off of it. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's great.
Yeah, it wasn't planned. Of course, I had to explain later why it was in the budget, but he was just sitting there watching, and I thought, hey, that would be great.
It is great.
I think it was a Boy Scout boat or something.
Hey, I thought it was Coast Guard.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. Give him a big flashlight and...
So that was my Saturday, that cue.
That was all Saturday.
Easter. It was a dry moment.
Actually, let's talk about the time. Let's talk about what time it takes.
As you know, we've had a mix on the show for 11 straight weeks.
That's right.
And the idea was to put...
Now a mix
10
to
shows,
tell
oh,
people.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. We have to
the
mix
final
the show.
Mix.
The final mix, the stuff that you're going to see on TV, you know, the final day that it's due happened once a week. For 11 weeks.
In a row.
You know, 11 weeks in a row, which, you know, so what happens is you get a show on a Thursday, and you have to have it written by Monday or Tuesday, and I have to do the music part of the mix on Wednesday, and then they mix it for the with the sound effects right. and stuff on Thursday and Friday. But I always have to be on the next show while you guys are. As a matter of fact, there's going to be a playback today.
That's right.
You know, and I'm not going to be at it because I got to be on. I'm working on the season finale. Right. But
so it's virtually.
It's nonstop. I mean, you know, my wife considers herself to be like an army wife. You know, Debbie is so wonderful with this because, as you know, it really is nonstop.
Yeah,
it's nonstop.
And I think it's harder for us. I mean, all around. I mean, I sound like I'm complaining and I'm not because I love it.
I'm not complaining either. Too. It's a blessing,
but,
really.
But the thing is, we do 24 episodes. Right. And those two extra episodes make
half a month.
Huge difference for us.
Can you imagine having 7 extra days between in the last 11 weeks? Yeah. It would have made a major difference.
It would have made a major difference. So it is a bit of a grind, especially as you get closer to the end.
Right.
You know. But, I mean, as you watch your shows, you realize there's no drop of quality in anybody, in the performances and the lighting. I mean, it's all there.
And you can think of it this way. In 4 seasons, we put together an extra third of an extra season.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so.
That's true. It's funny when they say, you know, we've done 3 seasons on HBO. And right. think, that's only 10 episodes and 12 episodes a season. You're not even close to what we've done. Well, we're gonna be hitting our 100th episode next year.
Right.
Our 4th episode in season 5 will be our 100th episode. So that's pretty exciting to all of us that we've been able to do this for 100 episodes.
Is our boy?
Investigation files I sent. App Brado's information waiting for me as soon as
those
I get back.
Great actors.
Okay, we've got the fingerprints.
Yep. That was a big act. I remember working on that boat scene. That was a. Those are the longer the scene, you know, you got to really kind of arc it, you know, because every scene in the show arcs.
Too early.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes a real.
And now this whole show, actually, right? You know, you're at the halfway point. It takes a complete turn. It's gone for this, you know, race. Get this guy. Now we've got this guy.
Right.
And so tonally, I guess music would change too because it's taken a whole different feel now.
Yep, it does.
Could be invalidated.
I don't know what to tell you. We're putting everything.
Because now it becomes more of a little bit of a mind game and this.
Yeah, I like these shows. You know, I love the shows that have peaking action music in the second act because then we have another chapter and then sets up another color.
And that's a little different, I think, too. I think, you know, if you look at sort of, you know, you compare yourself to everything else that's out there in television in 1 hour. And again, very different from other things that are out there that. You know, we're doing peaking action scenes in Act 2.
Right.
As opposed to your final big thing. And then, of course, you're into another beat.
Well, you know, it's funny. We don't peak so much that it's like, oh, the show's over. You know, we got to keep always an open door, you know. And here was the setup. Is this the first time? I forget. Is this the first time we see the missile? We don't know what it is yet. We do know the missile.
When did this happen?
And again, budget reason and time, it's really interesting. Just off topic a little bit here, but you know, a scene like that, you know, do we have time to show them attacking and, you know, then it's stuntmen and gunfire? Mm-hmm. Or what's the point? The point is that these guys took a convoy and took it. So then you start to minimalize it all and go, how little can we do to get that point across? And I think we did it.
Well, given that I did the boat scene, the scene before, I'm very grateful for that decision.
That was another thing.
It's not a big shootout.
You can't do that big boat scene like we did, have 2 scenes and then do another, you know, 5-10 minute action scene. And especially because you have to look at it, too. You know, we're our audience cares about the characters that get to see every week.
Right.
And, you know, that scene really had no one we knew. It was a bunch of unknown terrorists taking out a bunch of
unknown
military guys. So, and we even cut it shorter because it was actually a shot in there where the guy was, like, shooting the last couple of military guys that were alive.
Yeah.
And even that got cut out. We just, you know, cut it right down to the...
Oh, this scene.
Because you want to get into this.
Yeah, well, in this scene, we start to really sort of sense the...
That's right.
You know what the word I was thinking of when I saw this scene is claustrophobia. This guy is in a bunker.
Yeah.
And he's losing it. He's starting to lose it. And so you can kind of hear in the back a little bit of stuff. But that's one of the really big challenging things. Like, you'll have a big scene, like, you know, a convoy with a burning up, and you go into this, like, subtle scene.
And you go right into
this. We've never, ever strided to go, you know, part out. We always kind of segue.
Keep it going.
Yeah, we have a segue. And then here he is arriving.
And now you start a whole new storyline, and... You know, this is all about, you know, can we torture one more guy?
That's right.
Although at this point you're thinking, Edgar's going to take this guy out.
That's right, Edgar. He was a great character, too.
Yeah.
He and Chloe.
I'll find out if he knows anything about the missing warhead.
Tony.
What do you got?
I found the convoy. I just got off with Iowa Highway Patrol. Military transport was ambushed. Everyone's dead.
And I love Carlos. I've often been told, you know, don't score too heavily over Carlos because sometimes he's hard to hear.
Yeah. He's a whisperer.
Yeah.
If you talk to the sound guys, they'll all tell you.
Luckily,
the ADR guys, he's a whisperer.
And he's so good an actor, luckily. I don't have to do very much, though.
Yeah. Do you have a Chloe's theme?
You know, none has really
surfaced.
She's a little quirky. Occasionally, you'll hear some quirky textures.
Yeah.
And I'm really hoping next year there's an emergence of something because she's... I mean, people have told me that their favorite character, aside from Bauer, is Chloe. You know,
without a doubt. But that's another case of, you know, bringing someone in and trying something.
Yeah.
And Joel, I got to give credit to Joel Surnow. He just virtually saw her in a couple of movies and said, "I want that girl."
Really?
And I remember when we brought her into audition, I think she said like two words. And he said, "You got it," and which is rare because you don't usually do that. You let the people do it, and then you call back later and tell the management. And she just sat there, and went, "What?" He said, "You got it. You got the part. Now go. Just you got it. You just go."
I love that.
And so it was pretty funny. And he was right. I mean, I think everybody questioned it at first, but now we're all looking back, going, "That was brilliant, Joel."
CTU can sometimes be so heavy. You know, it's nice to have a little bit of color in there, breath.
Yeah, and the other thing we've done too with Chloe, which has been really interesting, is she gets to say things that if anybody else said them, they'd be really sappy.
Right.
But if she says, you know, "Oh, you do that because you love her,"
right,
then she gets to express all those things that you want to say without getting too soap opera.
Now here comes a flashback to my days on Nikita when you have people
the white room.
But this is always a little darker moment. But again, you don't need to make too much of this because the sight of a needle is
enough.
Disturbing anyway.
But you got a weird thing happening.
Yeah, over and over again, I'm encouraged by you guys to keep it a little off kilter. And I love that style. I love it combined with organic stuff.
What's this about?
I don't know.
Yeah, you can kind of hear a little bit of...
It's almost a dungeon quality, too.
You know,
the music.
It is. It's a little otherworldly, yeah, I guess, yeah. You know. But it kind of, there's a little bit of heartbeat stuff going on. I mean, it's you try to keep.
Well, the set, too, has more of a sci-fi feel to it than any of our other locations.
Oh, here's my ACLU guy theme or something. This is some sort of new, you know, one thing I like about this episode is you don't really know how to feel about this guy. I mean, you know, he's really sort of protecting civil liberties.
Mr. Prado's rights will not be violated. Take me to him now.
We have no choice, Curtis. Do what he says.
There's a nuclear warhead missing. This is our only lead.
And it's interesting, too, because when we first introduce the storyline, you think, so what? Big deal.
Right.
I mean, they didn't get through this guy. But,
that's right.
He becomes a pretty formidable opponent.
He becomes a big problem.
You know, big problem. And probably a real problem in today's world.
Yeah, because I thought, when I first spotted this, I thought, okay, what's going to happen is they're just going to delay letting the lawyer visit him and then torture him in five minutes and get at him. So it was... I always love, as you know, now on my 90th something episode or whatever, to be surprised. It's amazing how you guys still surprise.
Does that affect some of the music you put in? You think when you look at it for the first time, I was surprised there, so I want the music to
absolutely
to get the audience to do that.
You know, even if you guys think, you know, that surprise doesn't need to be honored so much, I'll always kind of go for it. I think when you go for something, as long as it's really real that you're going for it, you know, then you can never be really dissed 100%. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's really honest.
We're not happy about it either.
And I know Joel, too, when he watches it sometimes, too. And you know, you do it, obviously, as you're doing it alone. But it's a matter of where that surprise music comes in.
Yeah.
Whether it's a half a frame or 20 frames before, 20 frames after makes a huge difference.
That's right.
Because you don't want to jump the audience.
Yeah, and you don't want to give too much, you know, you don't. Sometimes I think in earlier shows, like in Nikita, in my younger years, you know, something really big would be coming to be.
Here it comes.
You know, and in 24, you don't want to do any of that.
Right.
You know, hopefully you don't.
But you do want to emphasize it after it's over.
Yeah.
You want to give it
absolutely.
Little. How do you think your music's changed over the 4 years?
Geez.
Or has it?
You know, I would say that the best comments I get from people, you know, some of the picture editors, when they put the placeholder music in, they commented that from season two on, it got a bit more minimal and manageable.
That's interesting.
I think maybe I did, you know, I think when you're younger, when I was a younger composer, you try to make peaks and valleys, like, well, I have to make a huge thing out of this moment.
Right.
And you don't. I mean, as I get older, you learn to trust the picture and get out of the way.
That's very interesting, because I think that would be my comment. If someone said, what's the difference from the first episode you did in year one and your finale in year four?
Yeah.
I'd almost say the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that it would graduate together, you know, where I was doing a lot of shots and trying to find a million moments in every scene.
Yeah.
You start to lay back and go, really, this is what it's about. Here's the one layer or the two layers, and that's it.
Yeah, I'm convinced there's like a confidence level in what
that's
you
right.
do, right? And I'm not saying that I'm as a matter of fact, I think I'm a pretty miserable person each and every week when I start a show.
Well, so am I, actually, if you think about it.
But, you know, when you're really kind of putting it out, I don't know, you can tell from season one to season four.
Right.
There's a synergy, there's a familiarity, there's a confidence in how we apply it,
yeah.
you know?
Well, it's experience, I think, doing
it. Is,
it
but you can't, rush that. I mean,
no,
you know, we've
can't.
Been at it for years. I mean, I've known you for since 96.
That's right.
You know,
so. And I think when some of the best product comes out of Hollywood is when you've got people that have been together for a long time.
Right.
There's no doubt about it, because there's just a shorthand that starts to happen.
That's true.
Here's, I mean, this is where the boxes kick.
Yeah,
on this show. This is why we're so different than anything else, because you got the one guy and you've got, you know, Kiefer coming in at full speed, and you get to watch it at the same time.
I have never, ever had to score such interesting people, you know, interesting walking through a room.
That's
either.
Right.
I mean, all you have to do
then
is walk
show.
Into a thing, and we have to make more of it.
Curtis, why is the suspect not in his restraints?
Amnesty Global.
These actors were wonderful. I mean, that's
I was just
going to
say the day players were fantastic, you know, this season. They were always
and it's
always
good. Because you're, you know, you're laying it all on them.
Yep.
I mean, you know, we know Kiefer. We know his performance level is always so wonderful. But, you know, it doesn't mean anything unless he's got that guy nose to nose with him. And these guys did just a great job. Especially, you just want to smack that guy.
Yeah.
May I speak with you privately? At the door.
Again, and I didn't. When I get the videos, the ticking clock graphics are never put in.
There, right.
But it's ironic that, you know, when I'm doing it, we always kind of keep it kind of moving around. You know, the music's moving right as the clocks are.
And that, you know, this is so well written. I mean, it's just some beautiful points here about sort of what we do in America and what has to be done to battle this, especially this line.
The Constitution was born out of extraordinary circumstances, Mr. Bauer. This plays out by the book. Not in a back room with a rubber hose.
This is great.
Mm-hmm. That is a really good. I think this is one of the most unique shows you've done. I mean, that we've done, because it really,
and, you know, that's again what's great about this show. Is that, you know, by episode 18, you're doing something that's totally off the mark, yet not off the mark.
Right.
That's what makes, I think, the show so interesting. Even from my end as a director, I mean, by the end of this year, I would have done 32 of these, and I treat every one of them like it's the first time I'm doing a show. It's like it's a new TV movie for me every time we do two episodes, because we do two together. So,
this was a big
So you
Jack
you
realizing
it there,
he
right?
realized something's up.
Now that's almost like a ticking clock.
Yeah, a bit.
Music.
What? You know, Joel always just asked me about, you know, what tells the story here, and. Yeah, you know, just tell a story. Don't ever get superfluous with the music. And
Curtis, from the time of his arrest, did the suspect have time to call a lawyer?
No.
It's funny, though. It's almost like his brain, too.
Exactly.
Tinkling ideas.
And that sound more or less represents, for some reason, I don't know why, but that sound for me more or less represented the ACLU lawyer and Jack's suspicion of how he got involved with it.
Right.
Kind of kicked in here, so.
You still can't get around that court order. I need to call the president.
I think this is interesting for people, too, because I don't think they... No one even thinks about the thought process that goes into what the thought process is. You're describing all of this that goes into every piece of music that goes into the show. I mean, you're not just grabbing music and throwing it in.
Oh, no.
You know, it's just like when we shoot. We just don't do a shot just because it's a shot. There's a very specific reason why every shot is done.
This is happening in the middle of the night.
This is a scene, and this is an example of a scene that we originally did not spot music. You guys watched it back,
right,
and
I
you
remember.
Felt, you know what? We need to have a little bit of motion here. So I had to put in something real quick.
See, it's amazing the uneasiness, though.
Yeah, and you know, and you guys were right, because he's really...
he's unsure.
The whole room is still wobbly, you know. The whole scene is, you know, he's wobbly. I love the way this character evolves. He's a jerk one breath and an insecure little...
It's also, I think, different for television, too. I think, you know, most television has portrayed presidents as
flawless.
These flawless are our ideal president here in America. And it's interesting that, you know, he's not a bad guy. He's just a normal guy. He's just a guy that has doubts, you know.
Yeah.
unlike, you know, Dennis Haysbert playing Palmer, who just, everything that comes out of his mouth is a direct decision.
And I think it should be noted that the other man in the scene, John Allen Nelson, worked on Sheena.
Yeah, we did Sheena in Florida together, so I brought him on the show, and he did great work for us here. And got some work right down to the finale, so he got some scenes right up to the finale. So
Q&A. Love Jude.
Mike, if we want to procure any information from this suspect, we're going to have to do it behind closed doors.
You're talking about torturing this man?
I'm talking about doing what is necessary to stop this warhead from being used against us.
Give us a moment, Bill. Mike, what do you think?
I think we need to do whatever it takes to find Marwan.
Now it's turned into like a bit of a beat.
Yeah.
Walt. Weigh in.
Listen. Damn, I love this. I love looking at your show. I just love it. It's great.
I love scoring your shows, man. What can I say?
Oh, no, we've turned it into a love fest. You're not supposed
no,
to do
No, it's
that,
okay. Right? No, really? We can't do that?
Yeah, we can
do it. It's log rolling, right?
It's honest. And John Allen's really matured as an actor. I think he's, you know, he's just ecstatic being amongst this kind of company.
He called me once and said, you know, this is the smallest part I've ever taken. I've never been happier.
That's right. But again, you know, it's what you said before, that we turned that little character part into, you know, 5-6 episode arc. And then he pays off at the end. Because what happens, too, sometimes the writers just write a whole new character. And, you know, the ones involved in production, because they haven't seen the footage yet. They didn't see that John Allen made something out of that part.
Right.
So we'll go back and go, okay, you wrote this new character in the White House? You know, we got a guy already that we used 2 episodes ago, and he's been, you know, he worked out really well. Let's make it him.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how that stuff develops. And that's exactly what happened with John Allen and his character.
This last little example for me, and I don't know how you make this happen, but I started noticing it in season 2. Just, I don't know how you film the people and the triadic things and the sort of, like, I hate to be so mundane, it's just what is going to happen. Right. There's a real sense of uncertainty. And nothing is being said.
Every
scene, it's really amazing.
On our show, it's really funny. That's one of the things I tell new directors that come on. Is that there is no conclusion. Almost every scene needs that kind of open end.
You did an episode once where Kiefer had to go up a flight of stairs, and you filmed it from 5 different angles.
I remember that. I did not put any
rhythm in it. I said, you know, I don't feel the need to put any rhythm in this scene. So I never put any rhythm. And normally you put in rhythm for an action scene, but I put in just a pad. And I was playing back for Joel. I said, I don't know why I don't want to put rhythm in this. And he says, I'll tell you exactly why. He says, because you shot it from like 5 or 6 different angles. You shot it from under the stairs, from the side.
And by cutting it, you put rhythm in.
Yeah, then we put it back. Yeah, we put it in. But it was just, there was so much done with the camera work that also affects exactly, I mean, it obviously does, you know, what you're going to do with the score. Oh, here's the disco.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, this is good, actually. This is, we could, we don't actually go inside you. We're only on the outside.
But we are hearing a piece of source music, which has become an absolute rarity in the last 3 seasons. So,
explain to everybody what source music is.
Like the music in the club.
That would be source music.
Yeah, source. It's the music that you hear. You know, in an ambient...
Because you're seeing
any,
something on the screen.
Exactly. An environment, you're in a bar and you hear someone playing piano, or you're in an elevator and you hear music, you know.
Or someone turns the radio on or off.
Exactly.
Right.
A real song. But generally, budgets don't permit to pay exorbitant amounts of money for like, hit songs. So what we do is we do... You know, I did this little track in the back, you know, to play over it. But it also combines with score very subtly after the end of it.
But then in later episodes, we actually go into the disco.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point,
they use the 24 theme as the remix that Armin Van Buuren did.
That's really interesting. So, and I know a friend of mine went to, his kid went to Cancun.
Oh, yeah.
And it came on, like,
did it really?
A disco on a big screen.
Oh, cool.
And he just said the place went crazy.
Really? Yeah. Oh, bad. I love
how cool
that.
Is that?
Yeah.
Disco 24. Who would have thought?
Okay. When you're at 39 minutes, that means you're in the last queue. I can almost guarantee it.
It's funny because it's always one of my director's notes. You know, when we're doing scenes, you know, it's my responsibility, obviously. But even Annie Melville, who's my script coordinator, who's with me, right beside me every day of every as I shoot, she reminds me, and I have to remind the actors, we're now going for the end.
Right.
You know, there's a point in the show where you make the turn.
Right.
And what I call it is racing to the end.
Really? You say so?
And that's all I tell actors sometimes. I just say to them, guys, I just want to remind you. we're racing to the end here. We're down to our last four scenes. It's time to pick it up,
right.
Push it to that level that we want to be. You know, it's what your music.
Yeah,
is.
Yeah.
You know, you're going for the final home stretch.
That's what I do on my own. It's funny. Yeah. It's funny. It's the same.
And that's exactly the term I use. I say, guys, racing, and they know it now. I mean, you know, guys like Carlos know it. I don't have to say much. I just say racing to the end. And he goes, okay, I got it, and it adjusts.
They know what's going on.
You know, if you can see it,
and I like
to feel it.
He was a good character too.
Yeah, James did a great job for us. And you know, hard at first. I remember the first couple episodes, just trying to fit into that CG world. It's so established.
Yeah,
you know.
So here's a situation: we start a rhythm cue right as the guy gets marched out,
and it never stops.
And we keep it going. You know, we don't go into some quite a quiet, trembling area here. Yeah. It's just a classic example of connecting the scenes in the real time way, just to give it the sort of feeling like it's everything's going on simultaneously.
And this is it's really interesting. You saw those big curves.
Yep.
On the outside of the building.
Yeah.
This is our production designer, Joseph Hodges. He based the inside on this outside.
Did he?
Yeah, this building is some high-tech firm that is virtually, you know, two blocks from our studio.
Is it
and basically, he used that as his idea. And you see those big curves, and you'll see that they play in CTU.
Right.
So it's an interesting note for people watching.
So here's, you know, again, here's a case where we're not setting anything up. Just a regular, normal day at the office. Beat. And then, ba-boom, you know, I mean.
See, now that makes a big difference, because your music could have told somebody.
It could have indicated. And I think in earlier years, I might have, but hopefully I've gotten a little wiser. So he leaves.
See, these are the moments I love. This wasn't in the script, but the fact that he's just watching this guy go away and he can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Those are the things that I love to grab and play with a little bit.
And I had a fan call me once, a friend of mine is a fan. They said, I hate when the music gets really big because I know the episode's ending.
That's right.
Because, you know, this is opening box, the final boxes.
Well, I find most episodes I watch, even if I directed them, the ending never comes where I think it's going to end.
Yeah.
It always suddenly just goes, boom, and it's over. And you go, oh, and you know, you're left with that little, like, gasp of breath. But, you know, that's the idea. Now I was a little disappointed here. The sensor is cut out. My finger cracks, unfortunately. The sound's still there. But
oh, man, I think the sound is just as good.
And see, so sometimes, I mean, really, it's nothing. It's a guy bending a finger, but, you know, that was a little too intense. I love our fanfares.
Yeah, this is really good the way it ended. It was sort of like very unstable. Oh god, man, this I don't think you lost anything by not having the fingers.
I think the actual sound was enough.
Okay. Mo's gonna be at a place.
I mean, Kiefer just looks crazed.
Yeah, you know what he's saying? He's saying, I got seven more shows to film.
Yeah.
This will help you with the pain.
But again, you know, like I said, it's the end. We gotta. Yeah. It's gotta be at a level that, you know, people are gonna go, you know, God, when is next week?
Oh, man.
Thanks, man. This was fun.
That was a blast, actually. Man, we gotta do this next year.
This has been John Cassar
and Sean Callery. Thank you for listening.
See you in another one.
All right.